Welcome, everybody, to The Lonely TARDIS, your journey through Time Lords and Space, Season 3, Episode 5? Yes, we are Episode 5 of this season of The Lonely TARDIS. We're going to be recapping Episodes 6 and 7 of this series of Doctor Who, so... our numbering system is all out of whack. I assure you we'll get everything back to normal at some point in the future. But until then, enjoy the show, which I'm sure you will. Joining me this week, as always, by the way, I'm Dolly Domofsky, as I didn't introduce myself, but as always, joining me this week, the pristine, the clean, the shiny Marcus Beer.
What?
Hello, Marcus. And Steven Strum.
Hi, guys. Hi to all the listeners, too, I guess.
You guess.
You notice you're not shiny, pristine, and clean.
No. I actually am pretty clean now. I got a haircut, and I shaved off my beard for the first time in like a year and a half over the weekend.
You look 12 years old, Steven. That's a good thing. Don't lose that. That's a good thing.
No, I just embraced my sort of... I started watching Uren High School Host Club over the weekend as well, which is a anime about a club of super rich boys who basically sit around their, you know, hosts, like hostess bars in Japan, but they're hosts for women. And one of the characters, they all have like a stereotype that they follow. And one of the characters is a boy Lolly, they call him. So he's a boy Lolita. And I'm just going to say, from now on, this is what I'm just going to call myself. I'm just going to embrace that part of my identity and understand that that's what I have to be. That's the role that I have to fill in this world. You know, it's a burden.
It's a burden. I love it. Not a problem with that. Well, gentlemen, we're Sean-less this week, but he will be joining us again next week. We have two fantastic Doctor Who episodes to talk to and talk about and into.
We're going to talk to them.
Hopefully they reply back. The first episode, The Caretaker, and then this past weekend's episode, Kill the Moon. And I'll do a brief recap of both of these. My recaps have been fantastic lately. In The Caretaker, the Doctor shows up to as caretaker of Coal Hill, or masquerading as caretaker of Coal Hill, to kind of look at these strange readings that have been popping up. What is it, the Archon or some type of energy readings?
Yes, the Archon.
That's okay. Archon. Yeah. And wherein the Skovox Blitzer shows up to kind of wreck the whole scene. The Doctor rescues Coal Hill, sends the Skovox Blitzer on its way with a little help from his friends. And some interesting relationship things started to happen throughout this episode, which carried over into Kill the Moon with... This past weekend, the Doctor and Clara, Clara's obviously been leading her separate life, I guess people have been mentioning. She travels with the Doctor and a student to, one of Clara's students to the moon. The student wants to see, what the Doctor is all about. So they go to the moon, they come to find that the moon is actually a living, breathing creature. It's an egg, it's about to hatch. The Doctor decides to give humanity the choice if they want to blow up the moon and save themselves from this, whatever this creature is, or to not blow up the moon, let the creature have its own way. And that's essentially the plot of the second episode. So do you guys want to go over just kind of both together initially, or talk about The Caretaker first?
Let's take them one at a time. I think we should take them one at a time, okay? Because I know you've got your... You got your connecting theory.
Yeah.
But I figure we should at least treat them as proper episodes.
Yeah, okay. Totally. I agree.
So, well, then let's start with The Caretaker, where the Doctor becomes Coal Hill's caretaker, I guess is the easiest way. And he carried that over into Kill the Moon. So, Caretaker, who wants to jump in first? Well, I will say that it was great, again, to see the Coal Hill... Again, the Coal Hill School, which has popped up throughout Doctor Who. It is the place that A lot of things have kind of taken place over the decades, over the 50 years. So awesome to see that again and to see it in a modern setting and to see, you know, everything that kind of takes place there. So
I'll probably let Marcus go first, just because I know he's always bursting with ideas. And usually I like to steal his stuff and come up with my own.
Leave your, let your hair cut and bark wet. You should go first.
Okay. Fair enough. So the biggest thing about this episode that sticks out to me, and I might be getting ahead of myself here because, you know, we haven't really talked about what the episode entailed itself, but it feels mostly like an episode that came at the wrong time of the season, or rather, like, if this had been in another season of Doctor Who, it would have come after and before a different episode. It's very, very much like The Lodger. It's even got kind of a similar name to it and everything like that. Obviously, it's the Doctor milling about with the humans, the silly little pudding brains down on Earth, pretending to be human himself, getting around. The big major difference being that Matt Smith's Doctor was very much naively sort of unaware of how much of an effect he was having on people, whereas Capaldi's Doctor has very much turned into the "I really don't have any time for any of you people, please get out of my way while I do my job" kind of Doctor, and that has a mixed effect by itself. But it feels like the kind of episode that would be happening as like a calm before the storm type episode, like The Lodger. Sure. Was, where The Lodger
This episode and The Lodger were both written by Gareth Roberts.
Okay.
So there's a lot of that tie in there.
Then totally that makes sense. It just and I think the episode overall is fairly strong. I got with this 2-week break, it's kind of tough for me to remember my initial reaction to the episode. But I remember thinking it was okay. The thing about it is that to me, Doctor Who is quite often character drama with action adventure in it, and I think the action adventure part of it was severely lacking. Like, I thought that was just about the most throwaway story we could have had with the Scovox Blitzer or whatever it was.
Next to the opening episode of the season.
Yeah, totally. I thought that part was a little bit of a bummer, and I think that the problem with the episode is kind of a problem that I've been developing with Capaldi all along, which is that I don't think I like him.
Thank you.
not that I don't like Capaldi the actor, not that I don't like his performance and the way that he, portrays the character that he's been given, which I still think is great. I just think that the character that they have written is a character that I am not supposed to like anymore.
He is, I was explaining this to my wife, we were watching Doctor Who last weekend, and she brought up, Matt Smith and David Tennant, and said, "This doctor's really different, and I can't quite put her, my finger on it." And I said, "It's because this doctor is an asshole. He is Clara's father who doesn't want her seeing anybody that's even remotely close to what he was like, because he grew up being a soldier or a leader or, whatever the terminology that Danny used. But he is a complete jerk. And by being complete jerk, I mean, I don't want to meet this doctor in person. Yes, I know he's a fantastic human being, but is that kind of what you're thinking as well? I mean, he's a jerk.
Totally. Yeah, he's just a complete asshole to Danny throughout the episode. He's been more and more of an asshole to Clara, and at first I thought it was a fun kind of like, "Oh, okay, I get what they're doing here. I get that it's meant to be like a, just so you know, this, there's not going to be any," like the phrase that he himself uses, "there's not going to be any hanky-panky between the doctor and anyone else this season." And I thought that was fine at first, but he has actually just gotten to be like emotionally abusive towards Clara throughout the episode, throughout the season, and like almost more like an old man dying in a retirement home, and she's like the nurse that has to put up with him all day long. So much of what you like about the doctor is the way that he interacts with people and the way that he makes you feel about humanity and the characters that he interacts with and yourself and all these different things. And none of that is shining through with Capaldi's character arc right now, which I think is probably intentional. Mm-hmm. But in the meantime, until we get to some kind of payoff, which, may or may not be coming, we've gone into much detail about how Moffat doesn't like to give us any good payoff. in the meantime, it's just not, it's just not fun. He's not a fun person. He's not a fun person to watch and listen to.
You know, I 100% agree with you, but at the same time, I find it incredibly refreshing to see this doctor be a jerk, because it's now it is a very different type of doctor than the last 7, 8, 9 years that we watched, right? This doctor, he is completely set in his ways. He doesn't want to hear anything that's not logical, that he can't figure out with a pencil and paper or, you know, through science. He's firmly, and again, I mean, this ties into some of the things we talked about in our past podcast episodes, but he's almost a forceful jerk to the extent where, I mean, again, I think it's paying off. You know, I'm enjoying this take on the doctor more so than this kind of puppy dog, you know, flirtatious young dude that's much better looking than I am. At least Peter Capaldi is worse. Isn't as good looking as us on this podcast, I guess you could say. Although he does reference the eyebrows far too much now. I think it's become almost too much of a... That's become his fez hat, right?
It's a little too precious.
A little too precious.
Every season of Doctor Who, there's something like that. You know, there's something about that. There's with Christopher Eccleston, it was maybe his like his jumper and like sounding like he was from the north. With David Tennant, it was probably... Oh God, I don't even know. Maybe the fact that he,
skinny boy in a suit.
Yep. Skinny boy in a suit. Mm-hmm. Yep. The Donna Noble talk. You know, the fez and the bow tie and everything like that. It's like every once in a while, it feels like a merchandising ploy. It's just like we are trying to market this doctor to you. I don't know what exactly they would sell me for a Capaldi gear, though, if they want to sell me like some false eyebrows that I can wear for Halloween or something like that. It's not like quite
that's
like a fez.
Not a bad idea, actually. I think I'll have to do that. But no, at the same time, I agree with you. There were parts of the episode which, and again, I also think that the Scovax Blitzer, which is just a horrible name for an alien or a robot, was a kind of a throwaway story. Although it did tie into the idea that hey, the doctor's kind of screwed around with Cole Hill enough over the years where the energy from the TARDIS is caused the Scovax to show up.
It's a little bit like the Rift.
You know, yes, exactly. A mini Rift, you might say. But, you know, there were parts of the episode where it was uncomfortable to watch the Doctor, right? To watch his interaction. And if I was, suffice to say, if I was Danny Pink in a couple of those situations, probably would have, thrown a fist into the doctor's face for being a complete asshole to me. But it could be justified because at the same time, he's painted so well in this role. And only Peter Capaldi can pull off this role that this doctor is becoming. And again, it'll go into Kill the Moon, which we'll talk about shortly here. But it's building up to something. All of this negativity, his almost disdain for humanity is... We're ants to him. He doesn't care if anybody dies because people die all the time. And we get this scene at the very end, which we'll discuss momentarily. He doesn't care if people around him die as long as, you know, to him, it's just this, continuation of the circle of science, not even the circle of life.
I want to actually, the last thing I want to say about the episode before we hear Marcus's take, I'm sure he wants to talk at some point. I'm going off of what you said about Danny being like justified in maybe like throwing a punch at him, like absolutely. And that was actually one of my biggest problems with this show with this episode is that they didn't address a very specific thing for me that seemed like a huge omission on the part of the writers and the writing staff. It was just like, so you've got this man who appears out of nowhere at a school around, in like a public place with a bunch of kids, and like people that could be, you know, be very easily hurt. And he starts going around the school, placing beeping, blinking little metal devices in hidden spots throughout the school. And you have a soldier who, you know, presumably has some experience, at least with like, seeing bombs and certain things like that. And he finds these devices that this person has been placing all around this area. And no one at any point like acknowledges the idea that like, hey, maybe that should have been a big red flag. Like, you know, maybe he's absolutely justified in thinking that was maybe a hazardous thing was happening around here. But like, neither Clara nor the Doctor nor Danny says anything about that throughout the entire episode. It just felt so bizarre that it was not mentioned at all, and that like Danny wasn't the one that was infuriated with the Doctor. Like he was very upset with him, but he was upset with him more like in this kind of general like, oh, you're such a jerk kind of way, as opposed to like, you could be putting kids in danger, you know crazy bastard. I just don't know. It seemed like a huge oversight.
All right, Marcus, lay it on us.
So yeah, this Doctor, Capaldi's Doctor, is a total dick, and I find that eminently relatable.
Annoyed Doctor.
One of the things I've noticed through this season is Capaldi, this regeneration of the Doctor seems to be channeling, you know, with each episode, different Doctors from the past. Mm-hmm. There's been a bit of Hartnell, a bit of Troughton, a bit of Pertwee. We had the yo-yo in the last episode. You know, it's almost as if, and again, I'm, you know, probably giving the season too much credit with regards to Moffat's grand plan, but there is definitely something not right with the Doctor, because there is no way that the Doctor should be confusing a teenage girl or whatever for a grown up, or you know, these insults that are coming through. And we have to remember that he's, I think I've said this before, he's in uncharted territory with this generation. It shouldn't be allowed. So I am wondering if there is something towards the end. I read a review of The Caretaker, and they made a good point, a good comparison, that it felt like an extended grown up version of one of the Sarah Jane Adventures.
That's a great point.
I could definitely see. I mean, I was disappointed that, you know, we didn't get more of the backstory of him and Old Hill, given what they teased in the past with, you know, just the little throwaway things that they'd thrown in for the 50th anniversary. I actually, my biggest fear for this was that the Doctor's in a school, so we're going to have to deal with spunky kids, you know, kids with big mouths who are just, oh, my child is, you know, so enigmatic and so eloquent, and oh, your child's a little shit. and that actually wasn't too much of an issue for me. I do think that this is more of a character, you know, character-driven episode. The action did feel kind of superfluous. I mean, he was just there for, look, here's a baddie, here's a monster. We can probably sell an action figure at Christmas for this thing. But that didn't really upset me very much. I mean, I will say, after the disappointment of the first couple of episodes, I think the show's got a lot better. It's gotten a lot stronger. I can see why Danny didn't turn around and smack the Doctor. I mean, you know, obviously something's happened in his history that he is almost like a pacifist now. These continued insults with regard to, oh, you know, PE teacher, gym teacher, you know, you're an ex-soldier, blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, the incredulous look on the Doctor's face when he realized that Clara and Danny are dating and it's not the Matt Smith lookalike.
I love that scene. That was great.
I mean,
he's almost proud. He's almost proud. Oh, I see. He got a bow tie. He's got hair. I approve.
Yeah, and I think it's, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on in his head, and I think obviously he has an affection for Clara, which, you know, was very strong in the previous Doctor, and he wants the best for her. But there is definitely something wrong upstairs. Something is scrambling the circuits. I don't know whether it's his own, you know, yes, he has this affection, but because he's regenerated into an older character, or because what he went through, losing the pawns, or, you know, losing Rogue, he has to distance himself. You know, he feels he has to distance himself yet again. I don't know what it is, but I'm hoping that this is, like I said, this is part of a grand scheme. On the whole, I mean, the episode was really quite enjoyable. I mean, this is definitely more I think Clara's season than the Doctor's.
Yes,
most definitely. Absolutely, yep.
And that's not a bad thing. I think Clara's stepping to the fore. She is, you know, and we've seen this before. I mean, when the Doctor's on his own, we end up with the Doctor, you know, from the Waters of Mars, so the Time Lord triumphant. So he does need the human, or, you know, he does need the companion to keep him grounded. And this relationship with Clara is different because she isn't on the TARDIS 24/7.
Mm-hmm.
She isn't like the Pons. She isn't like Rose or Donna, who came and, you know, came to visit and stayed a while.
Mm-hmm.
She turns up. Yeah, he turns up. He vanishes, but is off having her own life as well. And that's probably having, you know, not having the most beneficial effect on his psyche, because he goes off and does stuff that we don't know about, and I'm hoping we're going to find out about. I'm very intrigued about it. But I think that's why, you know, he's not himself. He is definitely not himself. But yeah, I thought it was, you know, it was a nice little episode. It wasn't the world's greatest Doctor Who episode. It was certainly better than some of the dross we put up with this season and some of the dross we had last season, to be honest with you. So, you know, and again, this was a Moffat-free episode.
Kind of, Moffat-free episode, yeah.
It was mostly Moffat-esque.
Yes.
But yeah, I enjoyed it. This season is not only all about, you know, Clara stepping forward and the Doctor being, you know, a little bit, you know, a couple of cans short of a six pack, but this season has just been about raising these questions. And yeah, Doctor Who has moved, you know, when they said, you know, they're going into darkness. I mean, there's definitely, this is a dark Doctor. There is something dodgy going on there, and we'll discuss that in Kill the Moon, because that's an even darker episode.
Before we move on to that, actually, I wanted to share with you, especially Marcus, but I think Dalia may have already told you this. I can't remember. I definitely told Sean, and it's a bit of a bummer that he's not here. But you, Marcus, like, you specifically were talking about Clara there, and that brings me to, like, my sort of greater conspiracy theory. See, Doctor Who season 8 conspiracy theory, which is that there's two things. Well, the first being that, like, we see Clara getting more and more sort of powerful, like more and more doctor-like, more and more Donna-like in a lot of ways, Dr. Donna-like. Even I can't remember if it was The Caretaker, if it was the episode beforehand, but like at one point she snaps her fingers and she opens up the TARDIS doors or closes them.
Yeah, yeah.
And she is like, you know, in the in Listen, we have him telling her, or we have her telling him, do as you're told and stuff like that, and commanding him around and bossing him around. And the idea, and then the second thing being, like, so we've got the Doctor being, you know, sort of like Marcus said, a couple cans short of a six pack. My greater Doctor Who season 8 conspiracy theory is that something happened either when Clara became the sort of integral part of the Doctor's life and split up into all those different Claras throughout his existence, or something happened when the Time Lords and the Gallifreyans sent regeneration over to the Doctor, where she is actually like a physiological part of him in some way, that she, that like that they are both the Doctor, and it is his human half and his Time Lord half, sort of, you know, whether you take that to be psychological or if you talk about like the expanded universe stuff, like possibly physiological stuff, you know, it is those two, that they're actually the two parts of the same person. They're both the Doctor, and that at the end of the season we're going to see them sort of realize this and like fuse together in some way, or, you know, regenerate like he did with the hand, and like the Doctor part of him that's in Clara goes back into the Doctor, or vice versa, or something like that. And we either see a new Doctor, like a one and done season for Capaldi going forward, or we just see, like, you know, that be this, you know, central thrust of the character, and like that ties in obviously somehow to Missy or something like that, and Heaven and whatnot.
We've been hearing a lot that this may be Jenna Coleman's last season on Doctor Who, so that could potentially play into it. So there were a couple.
She feels like his missing humanity.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, more so than ever, because, again, as I said a couple of minutes ago, it's, you know, we've seen that the Doctor needs somebody to keep him grounded. But you, I get what you're saying. There is definitely something lacking. I mean, at times it is, and they've referred to this, I mean, she's the school teacher. She's the authority figure.
Mm-hmm.
And he is the troubled genius in class who, you know, has the attention span of and is out causing trouble, and she's the authority figure. And it's such a, you know, it is a role reversal. I mean, yeah, we saw a little bit of it with Donna, but I mean, Donna was just, I think the Donna and the Doctor then were equals. They were, you know, there was no romance, anything like that. They were totally equal. She could give as good as she'd gotten. He respected her for that.
Mm-hmm.
This time, I don't think the Doctor can argue back. There's definitely something, and we all have that, you know, in our lives. We all have, you know, a couple of people who we meet who we just have this inability to argue with because, you know, they just wind us up so much or whatever. And there's, I see a lot of that with what's going on between these two right now. It is very, very confusing.
It's kind of go in some potentially great ways, and we'll again we'll talk to Kill the Moon in a second here, but a couple
potentially is such a loaded word there, Dali, when we're talking about Moffat.
I know we've been let down, although again the 50th was fantastic. So I'm gonna just throw a couple things out there. We'll one is we've seen it more than once this season, and whether it's the yo-yo or now the invisibility or the cloaking watch, the kind of the mental goo in his in the TARDIS, the control center. There's a lot of gadgets that are popping up this season that either haven't been around before or could have been used in previous situations the Doctor hadn't used. So I'm curious as to your thoughts as to why we're seeing all this technology that's this kind of one and done tech from the Doctor.
Well, I think, look, I mean, the Doctor is. Doctor is what, almost 2,000 years old?
Mm-hmm.
There's, you know, we know the TARDIS has got so many infinite rooms. I think they basically tried to do this to get away from using the sonic screwdriver as a bloody MacGuffin every week. I mean, there was a definite over-reliance with Matt Smith and with David Tennant on, you know, on the sonic screwdriver. And that got called out very, you know, very amusingly in the 50th. Where, you know, John Hurt would say, it's like, what are you going to do? You know, it's a screwdriver. What are you going to do? Build a bookshelf? And I think that probably, you know, that self-awareness did raise the need that, you know, yeah, the Doctor can have some interesting stuff. I think the telepathic matrix that they, you know, that you put your hands in the top, I think that's here to stay. I mean, we've already seen that pop up a couple of times, and I think that's coming back, especially with the various personality issues we've discussed with the Doctor. Something is fishy there. The invisible stealth watch, I just, you know, that was their MacGuffin.
Yeah.
I don't think we'll see that again, but I can understand them wanting to get away and, you know, use the sonic a little more sparingly because it is, you know, it's a tool. It's not a weapon. So,
I've hardly seen it this entire episode or this entire season. I feel like it's just really not shown up very much.
And well, part of the reason is it's the same sonic screwdriver from Matt Smith.
Yeah, there's no Capaldi iconicness to it. I guess that is part of it, maybe. But yeah, I don't know. Like the fact that maybe that's even just another clue. And like you mentioned, like the telepathic matrix for Clara and all that stuff. And it's just like I keep feeling like these are all just like minor hints that Clara is somehow more deeply tied to the Doctor's psyche and like than ever. Also, I think that Doctor Who just isn't a show that works very terribly well with metaphor. It kind of likes to beat you over the head with like actual physical representations of metaphor. So I feel like if we're talking about the Doctor with his lost humanity and stuff like that, I feel like just the way that the show is typically written, it just sets it up so much for like them to say, hey, when we say he lost his humanity, we weren't kidding around kind of thing. but yeah, like
I was gonna say, do you remember that at the beginning of Clara's run the TARDIS didn't like her?
Yes, right.
Yep,
right.
Yep.
Now she's clicking her fingers to close the door. Yep. Now she's putting her hands in the telepathic matrix.
Now the TARDIS does love her.
Yeah,
well, that's the thing. This goes back to Stephen's point. Why is the TARDIS now? I mean, again, it could be just another case of Moffat having a cool, interesting idea for the TARDIS disliking Clara and then totally throwing it out and forgetting about it, you know, halfway down the line.
Sure.
But something's definitely changed.
Yeah, they're just so different. Both of the like characters are just so very, very different than they were. And I think it's worked for the worse for Capaldi in a certain way, because just because it's so hard to like him. But I think it's definitely worked for the better for Clara, because Clara, remember when she first showed up as like plot device, the character, and we weren't. I remember us not being kind of super up on her arc in the first couple of seasons that she was present, and just kind of thinking like, man, she's like super charismatic. Like Jenna Coleman is just a very super charismatic person. Like she's super cute and she's awesome to have around, you know, when she has good material to work with, but she just very rarely had material to work with. And now she is basically the star of the show more so than the Doctor in a lot of time.
You bring up a good point. Do you think that maybe, you mentioned that she was this really kind of bubbly, happy girl, and now the Doctor is kind of, this whole traveling thing has broken her down, right? Because we had the episode that, you know, she's a traveler, she's all over the place, and she's having these kind of secret meetings between the Doctor and between Danny Pink, and things are never lining up correctly. And so, you know, she's torn between her life as a teacher and now being, you know, the Doctor's companion, and that's broken her down. She's no longer, she's very rarely this bubbly character now. These last two episodes, she's become a pessimist, right?
I see what you're saying. I think broken down is the wrong word for it.
Okay,
I think,
sure. Yeah.
I think hardened is more.
Yeah, I'm sorry, hardened.
Because we still see her, like, when there is fun, cool stuff happening, she's still the one who is enjoying the fun, cool stuff. Like, the robot of Sherwood is definitely the biggest example. It's just like, if that had been a David Tennant episode or a Matt Smith episode, it would have been Matt Smith or David Tennant being like, oh, this is amazing. And instead it was Clara being, oh, this is amazing. And the Doctor being like, this is bullshit. You know, like, this can't be real.
Yeah.
I just want to jump back to one thing with the TARDIS. What happened to the TARDIS that it used to take you where you needed to be, and it can get Clara back in time for a date?
Yeah,
right. No, I've actually been thinking about that a ton this season.
Right time. Yeah. What's happened to that? Because that was the beauty. I mean, they seem to have thrown that out now because, oh, let's have Clara have her own independent life, and all of a sudden the TARDIS is as reliable as Uber.
I mean, yet another hint, mate. Like, I mean, I can probably, like, just kind of drive everything I want, you know, to the conclusion that I want. So maybe this is just, you know, me doing that, and it'll be totally different by the time this is over. But it does kind of feel like, yeah, no, it goes where Clara wants it to go, is, you know, and in her life. And actually, I think it's better for the, you know, maybe it's just a convenience of writing. I swear this is the last thing I'll say about Clara this episode, or at least before we move on to Kill the Moon. But the one thing I really have been enjoying about Clara this season is that she kind of breaks down a lot of like basic sort of fantasy science fiction contemporary storytelling. Like so often, like you look at Edge of Tomorrow or Live, Die, Repeat or whatever, you know, how they changed the name to, like I kind of like that movie, but it is very much the modern cliche of, if you have a action sci-fi movie or film or show or television show that is set in kind of a contemporary setting, the main character is always this schlubby dude. It's always just like he's the character, he's the audience cipher, he's the guy that everybody can relate to, because Hollywood, for whatever reason, thinks that everybody who comes to see a movie is like an 18 to 25 year old, like kind of goofball, kind of not very good at whatever they're doing, but hey, you kind of like him because he's charismatic kind of character. Whereas Clara has become very much like what I think is kind of more of a relatable human being to a lot of people, which is just like super stressed out. Like, just, I want to have time to be me, and I want to have time to do the things I have to do. But at the same time, I feel like balancing those things out is too much. Like, I mean, maybe it's just me projecting myself onto the character a little bit because I've just, you know, I graduated from college here a few months ago, and like going into the working world, like my feelings are just like, man, I would love to be able to just play whatever games I want, but I have to play these games because I have to review them and I have to spend a few hours writing them, which means I'm spending more time writing about games than I am playing the games. And especially you go back and listen where she's like, okay, I can do this. And she's like super like exhausted in front of the mirror and saying like, I can do this. I can have both lives. I can mm-hmm. do whatever I want. I can make it all work. I can have it all. I think that's a super interesting character just in the context of what characters are like in modern fiction.
Sure. Sure. Well, before we go on to Kill the Moon, The Promised Land made an appearance this episode. Very interestingly, you have the police officer who kind of the first guy that the Skovox Blitzer neutralized, let's just say, ends up
killed the shit out of him.
Basically, yeah. In fact, again, very violent death. You see an arm kind of drop, a burnt arm fall in front of the camera. He ends up at the... this kind of gateway to heaven or the promised land. So what's this building up to? We don't know. I know we've had some theories or some potential theories, but we've only got 5 episodes left of Doctor Who. So hopefully something will come from it. But
there's no reason with regard to who gets taken. I mean, first episode was the Clockwork Man. Mm-hmm. Then it was people who'd fallen in battle alongside the Doctor. This one had just, you know, a police officer who'd sent some kids off to, you know, off to school and then got killed. So he doesn't even know who there is.
Right. Yep. So, yeah. He never encounters him.
Do you think, that, this promised land, this whole idea of all these people around the Doctor because of the Doctor, because they're all dying because of the Doctor, will finally weigh down on him at the end of the season to the point, because he's been throwing people away. Like I said earlier, he's been kind of throwing humanity away. They're putting brains. In their soup or whatever. He doesn't care if people die. And I almost wonder if all this will finally hit him and maybe all these people will actually come back at some point.
Not to ignore you there, Dally, but just to, something that Marcus, just to go off of Marcus's quick thing real quick. Actually, I guess in a roundabout way, the Doctor is kind of responsible for the policeman dying because
the
Skovox showed up because of the energy that the TARDIS had like marked on this town, right? Like if I'm remembering that correctly, like if that's why the Skovox was there because of all the stuff that had happened at Coal Hill, then technically speaking, it is the Doctor's fault that the Skovox was there in the first place, and then it is the Doctor's fault that the policeman does die.
Mm-hmm. And they do say to the policeman, I'm not disagreeing with you at all. I mean, like I said, this first one didn't literally come into contact with the Doctor, but to say that when he's, you know, they said, oh, you got here with the Skovox. We've been having a lot of those recently.
Okay.
So there's a lot of people, obviously, who got attacked and destroyed by this bloody monster. So there's untold number of people in this. So who else are we going to see? You know, we've only seen Missy and now this, you know, her assistant in this, you know, this
Seb,
very...
His name is, by the way, Seb.
Maybe that's why Missy didn't speak to the police officers, because he didn't have direct contact with the Doctor. Maybe she's only interested in people who have direct contact with him.
Well, wasn't didn't the dude say something like she's too busy to deal with him right now? Because
and then she's standing right there. She's just walking down a hallway, you know, and she just kind of like looks with this disdainful glance, like, you're not worth my time. Maybe that's like that seems like a feasible reason behind this. But like the fact that it's an organization too, that Seb is there, and that like like Marcus said, that they've been getting a lot of those lately, like. Presumably, the Skovox Blitzers are killing people on alien worlds, not just Earth. And not just humans, even. Maybe this is just some kind of weird. Maybe that, like, Missy is connected to the Doctor in some way, but this afterlife thing is actually some other kind of construction that is kind of separate from him. Sort of like how Utopia in the Doctor, you know, in the Master episode, that is. Utopia didn't have anything necessarily to do with the Doctor, but the Master had something to do with the Doctor.
Mm. I think the inference they were going for was saying that we've had a lot of people come in because of the Skovox. I think it was tied into that one.
That one, okay.
Yeah.
I think we will probably see, you know, a milkman and a mailman and a couple of hobos and a couple of hoodie-wearing Asbos. Also, you know, all turn up at some point. That was, again, that was just the feeling I got. So are we rating this one?
Yeah, let's rate it. Yep.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Out of five Scovox Blitzers.
3.5.
3.5, okay. I'm going to say, I will say a strong 3.5.
I'm going to give it 3 Garrus Vakarians out of 5.
That's right, this was the whole, is it a Mass Effect character?
Yeah, no, that Scovox Blitzer looks exactly like a Turian from like the neck up. That's crazy.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just, I mean, like for all the reasons that we've said, like I felt like the action was throwaway and the Doctor is not super likable, but I still like Clara a whole lot, and more Danny Pink is pretty good so far. He's pretty interesting. So.
And we never thought we'd say that at the beginning of this
series. Right. He did not want Danny Pink on the series before when we heard that he was cast, but, let's move on to kill the moon.
To Kill the Moon. Yep,
to Kill the Moon. It's like To Kill a Mockingbird.
Lee Harper's like finest sequel that no one ever talks about.
It's called
Harper Lee. Yes. I've read that book since like middle school, so you know, I apologize to the Lee estate.
Yep. Kill the Moon. I almost said To Kill the Moon. Kill the Moon. I found this episode. I'm just going to jump right in. Absolutely loved this episode because, again, I said there was a strong theme growing, especially between these last two episodes. The Doctor, as this, you know, last week, Clara was kind of the caretaker to the Doctor, right? I mean, that was even mentioned a couple times in the season. And this week, the Doctor kind of let humanity go on its own. And he was an absolute jerk when they needed him most. When she turned to him for all the answers, because she just knows the Doctor has all the answers, he left them out to dry and said, "Decision's up to you. Either you blow up this single life form, the last of its kind, kill it, and who knows what happens to your planet, or you let it live, and who knows what happens to your planet, because now you have no moon." So I found this episode and the previous one, again, this kind of jerk of a Doctor, but again, something is happening to the Doctor. We don't know what's happening. He's clearly losing his connection to humanity. Until I felt the very end where I found this, the moment that Clara finally turns to the Doctor and just kind of unloads on it. I'm done with you. I'm through. You know, she basically pours her heart out and says, you are not Matt Smith. You are not what the Doctor should be. You are not a good man. No, she doesn't say you're not a good man, but you are not a good man. And that kind of, you can kind of see that something finally click in the Doctor that, hey, maybe he's being the Doctor wrong, you know? So I love this episode for that reason. I love this giant creation of this monster that lived as an egg and somehow managed to lay an egg split second later. The size of the moon.
After it had blown up the moon.
By the way, it blew up the moon. And of course, none of those particles or rocks are going to hit Earth, but whatever.
They say it disintegrates, but like more like the fact that it like flies away and then they're like, oh, it's flown away. And then they look back up again and it's like, oh, and it laid an egg.
That quickly.
It's just like it was already leaving and then the egg is there like 5 seconds later. It was just odd.
Yep. But I love this episode. I thought it was so well, and there were parts of it that reminded me of Silence in the Library, right? Because there's scenes where the spider creations, which are actually this virus or this bacteria, you're walking through these almost like Alien, right? Almost like the film Alien, where you're running from these creatures and Doctor and Clara and I forget the student's name, Courtney, the student and. Even the astronaut, the first woman on the moon, whatever her name was, I forget her actual name.
Courtney was the first woman on the moon.
Exactly. Well, Captain Lundvik, it kind of feels like a cross between a whole bunch of different things. Again, I mentioned Alien, I mentioned Silence in the Library. And I also think this is kind of like the B-side to Waters of Mars, because the Doctor's essentially on his own, even though it takes place at the very end. He leaves humanity on its own, and so to fend for themselves. And
the total opposite of Waters of Mars.
Exactly. Yes. That's what I said the B-side, the flip side. But really a really interesting episode. I felt it was exceedingly well-written. I'm trying to find out who wrote it. The writer was Peter Harness, no relation to Jack Harkness, although the names are close.
It was his first crack at writing.
Really?
An episode, and it was a first-time director as well.
Oh, great. Yeah, director Paul Wilmshurst. But, I really enjoyed it. What about you guys? What did you think?
I loved it. This was certainly, I think, the darkest one. I know people would go back to, Listen, and there's an unconscionable bunch of Americans who seem to think that Listen was the best episode ever. So, fucking idiots.
Goodbye, American audience.
But no, I thought this was a scary episode.
Mm-hmm.
The setting, the moon, even the aesthetics, let's look at the set design and everything. They went to Lanzarote where they had the black sand there. And that was that's what was used to double in there. That really worked well. It was creepy. I mean, the first time we saw the spiders, I know they're bacteria, but right. They're spiders.
They're spider webs.
Yeah. That was creepy. I mean, that whole bit where they were all, when you first see the spider and it's coming down the hall and it's don't move and move very slowly. And that was some chilling stuff. And, totally validates it, because in the UK, they've moved Doctor Who to a later time slot.
Yes, that's right. To 9 o'clock. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it's 8 or 8:30. So okay,
yeah,
it's,
yeah.
But because after 9 o'clock, that's the cutoff. 9 o'clock is the watershed.
Oh,
in the UK.
Sure.
But it was genuinely scary. I mean, we saw two people die again.
Mm-hmm.
This was psychologically very cool. I mean, there was also some fun bits in it. I mean, the fact that the school kid who was nowhere near again as annoying as I thought she'd be.
Yeah.
kudos for writing a non-annoying child in television. I mean, that's an achievement in itself.
Walking Dead writers, take note, please. Yes. Thank you.
Well, every other TV show and movie in humanity, please. I mean, the little tie-in from the week before where she'd thrown up on the TARDIS and had the Dettol, which is like Clorox. So she'd been.
I was wondering about that. I never heard of that.
Yeah, Dettol is it's an antiseptic agent. But the fact that she had that and she carried it with her as almost like a safety blanket.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the little things like she posting pictures on Tumblr things.
That was great, yeah.
That was amusing. But it was all the jokes were few and far between. But when they, when they hit, they were in such sharp contrast that, it made me smile and then just made me go back and appreciate the scary shit even more.
You know what? Before you go on, one thing I noticed that this Doctor has been doing is that he doesn't care who finds out about him, right? Previous Doctors, he kind of kept things a little more secret. Matt Smith and David Tennant wouldn't have allowed anybody to post anything to Tumblr. Meanwhile, this Doctor, he's like, yeah, sure, come along. I don't care if I screw up time by letting some high school kid in the, some elementary grade school kid in the TARDIS to fly around the universe with me. No problem. Go ahead. I'll show you around. He doesn't seem to care anymore, right? This Doctor is very much a what happens, happens type of guy.
Well, I think the interesting thing was they were in the year 2149 or whatever it was, and I'm sure she was trying to post stuff to Tumblr, but there was no way. You're right.
Maybe she had a super phone. Who knows?
Yeah, and he did grab the phone, and I think he sonicked it at one point. So I'm guessing all that stuff is removed. But yeah, especially going back to the whole, if you go back to the Dalek episode, he says, "How do you know who I am?" And the Dalek says, "You are a doctor. You are my doctor."
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's this. there is definitely, you know, the unevenness or the lacking something, you know, of, you know, of this Doctor. He's all over the shop at times. But then, you know, when he does piss off, when he does let them make a decision, that did feel, that felt kind of Tom Baker-y.
Yeah, it really kind of Tom Baker-y.
And not to be confused with Tom's Bakery, where they make some amazing, but you know, Bakerish, if you will. But yes, you know, he turned around, you know, I mean, it's almost as if, and this taps back into your theory that it's Stephen, that she is his humanity, that he had the faith in her to make the right decision. I mean, I would like to know where he went, because he hops in the TARDIS. And he's off. TARDIS is gone. I mean, did he go, you know, did he go into the future 5 minutes or, you know, an hour or whatever to see what happened and then came back so that he couldn't interfere with his own timeline? Oh, the whole not interfering with his own timeline wouldn't
really
happen because he was in a different place and time. But there's something towards the end of this episode. I know we'll talk to the Clara thing, but this has been on my mind since I watched it. Clara's talking to Danny after she's, you know, just given Doctor the mother and father of all mouthfuls. And he says he's had a hell of a day. What's the odds the Doctor turned up and took him somewhere?
Because
the Doctor was gone for X amount of time, which, you know, with a TARDIS means that he could have gone off and had 2 weeks worth of adventures. But I'm wondering if something happened with Danny, you know, where he went back to the school and, you know, had some sort of conversation with Danny or whatever it was, and something happened with those two that
maybe it just deals with Danny's past.
Maybe, yeah, maybe it does. Or maybe, you know, this touches on why the Doctor's trying to be a dick. Perhaps he's, you know, he said something to him along the lines of, you need to let her go. You need to push her away so that she can go off and be, you know, she can have a life. She doesn't die. Because we've, you know, we've seen this before with the ponds and everything, where they ended up trapped in the past. They went and never came back. So, you know, this could be him trying to push her away. But I gotta say that, you know, that rant that she went on, where she put him in his place.
Oh, so epic, so epic.
I will slap you so hard you will regenerate.
I love that line.
I mean, there's been some beautiful lines, you know, putting heads, eyebrows. You know, there've been some amazing lines, but that was the creme de la creme.
It was perfect. And it was perfect.
She felt like his mom.
Yeah.
She felt like his mom. She felt like, you know, she needed to physically shake him. And
I love the delivery on that line too, because it's just the way that she, like, the anger behind that sentence, like, she's not joking. She's not like, oh, putting heads, you know, goofy throwaway line. Like, she means it. She means that if he does not shape up, she will slap the shit out of him.
And yeah, I mean, you know, good for her, because it's the last couple of episodes. Well, actually, I mean, on and off since the beginning of the season, as we talked about, it's been an abusive relationship. And put the first couple of episodes down to regeneration sickness, you know, him not knowing what the hell is going on. But this has become abusive in general. I mean, particularly to her, but also to every other character, you know, with Danny, with the school kid, with, and even though he tries to do something nice for the school kid after telling her she was no one special, he takes the moon. He still, you know, it's like for every good thing he does, he has to cover it up with five or six insults.
Right.
You know,
right.
The fact that he leaves the captain on the beach 2,000 miles away from NASA. Beach, by the way, looked like Kevin Sheehan in West Wales. They filmed a lot of stuff in the past. 7 miles of beautiful, unspoiled beach. They actually used to do land speed trials there. It's an amazing beach. But I digress. But yeah, this was, again, this was the best episode of the season.
Yeah, it had, I agree.
It had the character-driven stuff, but it had the action. It had the Doctor going off in, you know, nobody thought when we saw the trailers that, you know, oh, he's not there. All right, well, what's, you know, he's off being captured. And then you see him jump off, you know, into that chasm, and you think, okay, so that's why he's not there. You don't think it's because he said, you know, make your minds up, you know, you puny humans. I'm disappearing for a while.
And at the same time, he does it because he thinks he's teaching humanity. He's, you have to go through this yourself, and you have to do this. And Clara says, you can't be the asshole that way. That's not how this is done. You can't get us to this point and leave us hanging without, you know. It's basically her saying, it's your fault we came to this point, you know. One thing that I found really interesting that both of you kind of touched on, and Stephen, you mentioned earlier, this is really becoming Clara's season. One of the things that people really wanted before Peter Capaldi, or that there was growing internet buzz before Peter Capaldi was announced as the next Doctor, was a female Doctor, right? We heard that, why can't the Doctor regenerate into a woman? You know, there's all kinds of things. It would do so great for the show. It would bring in a whole different audience. Is that what's happening with Clara right now? I mean, you've mentioned the humanity. This isn't Doctor Who. This is the life and times of Clara Oswald, right? This whole season has been about Clara, and it's been fantastic. There's been some up and down, just like every Doctor Who season there is, but she's kind of the Doctor, you know, she's at least the Doctor's humanity. It's something that he's lacking, and I'm finding that really intriguing as a sort of setup for what we're kind of barreling down to here in the next 5 weeks.
Well, I mean, it's funny you say that. Actually, when I told Sean about my sort of greater Doctor Who conspiracy theory.
Mm-hmm. Your cockamamie theory?
My cockamamie theory, you know, the one they locked me away for. part of it was, like, we could see in the next regeneration, if it happens to happen after this Christmas special or whatever, we could see a woman Doctor. We could see a, you know, like, if the two of them fuse together in some way, you know, like, it could totally become an... I don't think you would see Jenna Coleman just become the new Doctor, literally the new Doctor. I think they would probably play with a older actor. I think that if they two came together, yeah, they would totally... More someone around Alex Kingston's age. And, you know, part of it is, like, even if that's not the case, like, I honestly do very much think, like, a woman Doctor is coming sooner than a lot of us think and sooner than a lot of people would like to think, it seems. And I'm sort of, like, I'm absolutely, like, I don't see any problem with it, especially since they've, like, Neil Gaiman laid the groundwork for, like, the idea of multiple genders per Time Lord and per Gallifreyan with the Corsair, and talking about how the Corsair, you know, was sometimes a woman and sometimes a man. Honestly, like, it just makes it, like, whatever the Doctor is, as long as the Doctor is written in a way that feels like the Doctor, in a way that makes me feel like, you know, the pride and hope for humanity and, like, going to the stars and becoming this great thing that we can hopefully one day become, I think that is absolutely what I need. And actually, like, if they want to make a statement, I think that, you know, is a way of getting around that. You know, you're obviously making different kinds of statements, you know, at the same time, because it is a character that has been a man for 50 years or whatnot. But maybe I think this is kind of an attempt at least to ease people's idea as we move forward.
No. And I'll tell you why. I think basically we've seen Clara come to the fore this season because she was so badly underwritten.
Yeah.
And she is filling in the, and she is carrying the show right now. She is the focal point, which is, when Russell T. Davis started off, Rose was the focal point. It's the companion, you know, he turned it into this thing where the companion was the focus.
Right.
And got to remember that, obviously, BBC America pulls in some great views, but no matter how many people here in America want to write their editorials saying the Doctor's ready to be a woman, I don't think the UK is ready for it. I think there'd be an outcry. I will point to what I've said before, that it causes problems with a companion, because the companion has always been a female character, and if you switch that up and you have two female, you have two women, well, how's that going to work? And it's because I don't have the faith in somebody to be able to create a doctor companion relationship with another woman that would work really well, and then you put a bloke in there, and that's really going to mess things up. I don't think the BBC is ready to change that. I think if somebody comes along with a map and a breakdown for a, you know, why a female doctor would work, and this is how it would work, that, you know, and this is how the companions could work, and blah, 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 that's different. But I don't think anybody's done that. I think it keeps on coming up because, you know, we're at the internet age where everybody's got an opinion. And everybody's got a fucking opinion. They feel that their opinion is the most important thing. And then they listen to other people of the same opinion, which just validates their opinion even more. I mean, we're seeing this in the games industry with Gamergate right now. Just because a small percentage of people have the same opinion over and over again, and they validate each other's opinions, doesn't mean it's going to happen. Doesn't mean necessarily that it's right. So I think that this season, I think we will probably see Clara go.
Yeah.
Akron. Yeah. I think something's going to happen. There will be some sort of rip. I'm wondering if Clara's going to end up in heaven.
Interesting.
Becomes like the new proprietor, maybe?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, we've talked about the Danny Pink. Will they, won't they? You know, we don't know what's going to go on further down the line. But they do need to sort it out. They do need to put it together. I'd be sorry to see Clara go because I love the way that she's blossomed. I think we should have more, you know, we should have more companions like her and like Donna, and less like the ones who all look crushy, crushy, blah, blah, blah. Because that never happened during the, you know, the original series. This gap between the two. I mean, I think the closest you came was Sarah Jane Smith.
Sorry about that. You can go.
Oh, okay. I thought you were interjecting.
Oh, I was going to, but I don't. I want to interject, but I don't want to interrupt. You know. So.
No, interject away. Because otherwise, I'll go off on a whole rant that will last all night, and then the Lonely TARDIS comments page will be, "Oh, Marcus Beer's such a misogynist."
I was just going to say that, like, and you saying that, like, an entire series of events. We'll call this Stephen Strum's Doctor Who Season 8 Conspiracy Theory B. like, oh my god, like this entire horrible series of events just unfolded in my mind. This idea of Danny coming on the TARDIS, somehow getting killed, being pulled up into heaven. They defeat Missy because of whatever reason, whatever evil she has plotted, or, you know, whatever, or maybe she's dying and or something like that. And for whatever reason, Clara then, like, is offered the option of becoming the new proprietor of this heaven thing, and then she chooses to take it so that she can be with Danny, so that she's, like, the head of heaven, and, like, Danny is dead, so he's in heaven, and the only way they can be together is if they're both there at the same time, and, like, just this horrible,
that, you know... You're okay, though, Stephen. That's debunked, because as we saw a couple episodes back... You have basically Clara's great grandson is a time traveler.
Danny's great great grandson.
Yeah, but he mentions that Clara's family. That's why he hands her the toy. So,
oh god, but you know, whatever. Like Russell T. Davies kept walking back on who the face of Bo actually was too. So I don't know. I just don't trust anything on Doctor Who to actually have a lasting impact anymore. Like I just don't. Or, you know, maybe if they do that, maybe they jump forward 2 years at some point, because maybe the doctor, maybe when the doctor comes back, you know, from being by himself and doing his Orient Express in space thing, he comes back and Clara and Danny have been together for 3 years and they already have a kid, and then the kid gets sent to foster care just like Danny while they're dead, and he ends up becoming
his own father.
Yeah, he ends up becoming his own father. Yep, that's where I was going with that.
You know, by the way, did you guys see that great article on Clickhole about, which is The Onion, about I didn't understand my own father. I didn't understand my father till I went back in time and became him.
That's pretty good.
It's very Doctor Who timey-wimey. Just a quick heads up that next week's episode, or this coming weekend's episode, Mummy on the Orient Express, Clara Oswald, or Jenna Coleman, is not listed as being an actor in the episode. Danny Pink, Samuel Anderson, however, is. So could this potentially be the missing chunk of time that that the Doctor disappeared, grabbed Danny, took Danny with him on this Orient Express trip?
I doubt it. I think this is him sulking after Clara gave him what for in the last episode.
Okay.
He always has to go have a good sulk, you know. Probably the most doctory thing about Capaldi, if it turns out to be the case, like the Doctor going off to have his good sulk after somebody leaves him, or somebody gets thrown through time, or somebody gets whatever. He needs to go have a moment to himself where he goes and does something, you know. In this case, I don't know how it's exactly going to play out, you know. Now we're getting to talking about Orient Express, but in this case, I'm not sure how it's going to turn out, because previously it was always like he wanted to go on a vacation, and his vacation was always, I want to go see something amazing. But Capaldi just does not seem interested in seeing anything amazing. He doesn't seem interested in travel in general. Like, I don't know what his motivation is really right now. Like, he's just kind of, his motivation is that he is at the beck and call of Clara. Like, you know, this latest episode, they go to the moon because Clara tells him that he needs to do something about Courtney, and, you know, she doesn't want him to go to the moon, but that's what, you know, he does it because of motivation brought on by Clara. You know, in the Caretaker, it was because, you know, something bad was going to happen in an area around Clara. You know, it was, he doesn't really have any kind of internal motivations right now. And maybe that's part of the problem with the character, but anyway.
Let's do a quick rating of, or anything else left on this episode that we want to mention.
It's very beautiful. Like, I watched the whole thing in HD. Gorgeous.
Yeah.
With the exception of the kind of goofy spaceship shuttle landing thing sequence at the beginning, like, the exterior shots of the moon are absolutely gorgeous. Like, they are just superbly well shot.
They've been doing a fantastic job on the set pieces this season. I mean, they're completely varied. You know, they're going from one end of the spectrum to another, whether it's, you know, 1800s London, or the moon, or, you know, inside of a spaceship. You know, they've been doing some really great things with set pieces this year. So really innovative.
The other thing, too, is I didn't really say anything about Kill the Moon. I just kind of interjected.
Sure.
But I know we're getting kind of late, and like Marcus said, we don't want to have everybody go. We don't want to go on forever. But
I'm sure our listeners would want us to, though.
Yeah, maybe. Or maybe they're just like, God, wrap it up. Oh, 30 minutes. I'm done on my treadmill. Like, hurry up. I was just going to say, like, I found the ending supremely confusing. Like, I was absolutely baffled by, because the episode, to me, and nobody mentioned this at all, neither of you guys did anyway, maybe Sean would have, but this is, to me, the Star Whale. Like, this is the Star Whale all over again. Mm. We have a big giant monster or a big giant animal of some kind that, you know, humanity has to decide the fate of in some way. And why it's so confusing to me is because, like, his whole ethos for leaving them behind to decide for themselves about what, you know, how they'll continue on in the future and everything like that is like, okay, I'm see you guys. This decision is super important and super huge because it's a last of its kind type thing. And it's something that you've got to figure out for yourselves is so very like the Star Whale. And yet in the Star Whale, he had no problem making that decision for humanity and was like, no, you stupid humans, you made the wrong decision already. And then saw that the humans would make the right decision in the end. You know, Amy eventually did the right thing, but he had no problem there. And in this case, it's like, oh yeah, this is too important. You guys, you know, figure it out for yourselves. And my immediate thought was like, can you provide some explanation to why the change of heart? Like why you're thinking so differently now, but maybe it's just because he's a different doctor. But
that's what you're tapping into there is what I said earlier, that this was felt very Tom Baker Jensen.
Yeah.
Because that's when, you know, he has the option or the opportunity to wipe out the entire Dalek race before it starts and save untold billions of lives. But then the whole thing of the, you know, if the Daleks are created, new friendships are made, new pacts are made, people come together to fight the Daleks. And, you know, that's why this one just, it wasn't just the yo-yo. It was just a very Tom Baker-y episode. And I mean, I'm just wondering, you know, what's next. I mean, he's also channeling a lot Colin Baker as well, who was a miserable bastard. You know, a lot of the, you know, for the first few episodes, he was very similar to this Doctor. So that's why I'm wondering, you know, if there is something with this unnatural regeneration. And I hope it doesn't continue. I hope, you know, it settles down. They give us some answers. They settle it down so that, you know, he can create his own Doctor who isn't, you know, multiple personality syndrome. They can give us a little closure on, you know, what's going on. And, you know, also answer some of the other questions. The one thing I'll say is that we know they've just wrapped on the Christmas special. You know, they finally wrapped that up. But this is, I mean, I haven't seen any announcements. There's been no confirmation of Clara leaving. There's no confirmation of plans for next season. There's not much at all. And I know, you know, they won't start shooting until February, March. But this, you know, the Moffat's been unusually quiet the last couple of weeks as well. I'm wondering if they're gearing up, you know, for this double whammy, or maybe even, God forbid, a triple whammy. Certainly don't want Capaldi to go after one season. I would like to stay for two at the very least and explore this character. But are we looking at a triple whammy for next, you know, for next season of new Doctor, new head writer, new companion. Are we, you know, we know the BBC is not stupid. They're not going to turn around and say Doctor Who's cancelled, because the ratings are still up there. The ratings are doing phenomenally well for, you know, for everybody. The merchandise that sells like crazy, and people come to Comic-Con and every other con and just go bananas for it. It's huge cultural event.
It's just about the only, like, product of British television that has the sort of impact that it does in America and globally, for that matter.
That and Top Gear.
True enough.
It's the beauty of Doctor Who is that it's the one thing that cannot be remade, and they won't let it be remade. God forbid, you know, I mean, especially after watching the Borgia remake Grace Point this week. You know, I am glad that they're very selective with what products they let be remade, because David Tennant's American accent is a tad bit. That's
about it. I literally got a text last night, almost identical to the conversation I had with you and Mike Williams, where it was just somebody saying, like, it's the weirdest thing. It was some guy, it was a friend of mine, telling me that just, like, listening to David Tennant with an American accent, but it's the same character and the same face, but it sounds nothing like the David Tennant that you know, is just the weirdest thing in the world to him.
So what's really interesting is how many Doctor Who actors and actresses have made the jump into American television. David Tennant is now on Broadchurch or whatever it's called in
Grace
the US.
Point.
Sorry, Grace Point in the US. You have
Karen Gillan in Guardians of the Freaking Galaxy.
Well, and in the regular TV series Selfie, she's in that. She's the lead actress in there.
Yeah, that's not gonna last long.
And then you have Christopher Eccleston in Dally, The Leftovers.
Sometimes I know your microphone mutes out people on Google Hangouts, but I just wanted to make sure that Marcus said something there.
Oh, he started to say something.
Yeah, Selfie canceled in 2 weeks.
You think so?
Yeah.
But you're right. Easily.
Since, you know, he's made the jump over with The Leftovers, which we don't know if that's coming back. And, of course, we do have Captain Jack in Arrow.
Yeah.
And seems like he's recurring.
And yeah, he's in a couple of other series as well, isn't he?
He's going to be a recurring character in season three, or this latest season.
I mean, he's also in, I think, Zero Dark Third.
Matt Smith has a couple films coming up.
Does he?
Yeah, he has.
It's different. It's different now, where, you know, if you were the Doctor, then you were typecast as the Doctor back in the old days. Mm-hmm. The world was a much bigger place, and, you know, Doctor Who was only shown on PBS over here, and it was a very niche show, and it was getting phenomenal ratings in the UK, you know, compared to, you know, in comparison to other shows. But it definitely, there's a lot of actors who are, you know, the main actors who are breaking out. I mean, we saw Billy Piper in Penny Dreadful,
which is coming back.
Good, I liked it. I hope she's worked with an acting coach. Let me just say this on we can go back to actually rating this episode. If you watch Grace Point, stop watching it.
go and watch Broadchurch. Mm-hmm. I think it's on Amazon. I think you get it on iTunes.
Netflix.
Netflix, whatever you can find it on. Go watch Broadchurch, because if you're listening to this podcast, you're a Who fan anyway. And if you're a Who fan anyway, you can handle the accents. And this is one of my biggest issues with American TV. They're very good at exporting stuff overseas, but very bad at bringing stuff culturally from different countries and showing it in primetime over here. A lot of the primetime series over there I grew up watching. I mean, from over here, I watched them because they were on Charlie's Angels, Bionic Man, Mammal, Street Hawk, Knight Rider, all these shows, the A-Team. But when he hit the boots on the other foot, Broadchurch would have been great aired on a network over here to show, and it just shows some of the insularity of American TV. And this is what
I'm sure you already know this, but up until just a few decades ago, I think, when you were releasing a British film, especially horror films in America, they would not have any lines spoken in the movie, in the trailers for the movie, because they didn't want people to know that people were speaking with British accents. They wanted people to think that it was all just Americans. And Edgar Wright, I played up that same joke in his Grindhouse movie trailer none of the characters in that whole trailer speak, because that's just how it was in that era of films.
And again, the world was a much bigger place, and Americans were very uncomfortable with foreign stuff and couldn't understand the accents, which I understand. I mean, Trainspotting needed subtitles. Mm-hmm. I watched Trainspotting when I was living in the UK, and I needed subtitles for that film. But I just find it interesting that if I think America might be actually a better place if they actually, just a more sort of like world aware place, if they started bringing in more stuff and showing it on prime time that wasn't just, tucked away on cable, was put on some of the big ones. But I digress, as I always do. Let's rate this, and I'm going to go first. Sure. I'm going to give it 4.75 Dettols out of 5.
This was my favorite episode of the season. I'm going to give it a 5 out of 5. An excellent 5 out of 5.
I think I'll come in a little bit lower than both of you guys, just because I was so confused about the ending. And just like, as much as I loved the performances and all that stuff, and kind of did, like, I mean, you talk about Into Darkness, like, this episode isn't just dark, it's downright just grim and humorless. It's upsetting. And I liked all that stuff, but 4 out of 5 probably for me. Just because, just that ending, for as much as I love the character stuff, I just felt it was super weird. It was once again going back to the well, like we've talked about many times, which at this point it cannot be a coincidence that they keep going back to the same wells of these ideas with spacefaring humans and their connection to giant space animals. And stuff like that.
We got the Orient Express in space a couple of years after Titanic in space.
Yep. But again,
and we've said this all this season. There's been a lot of stuff revisited. The Caretaker was school reunion.
Mm-hmm. School reunion / The Lodger. Yeah.
And again, this is perhaps this does tap in, and it's being way too, giving Moffat and Co. way too much credit, but perhaps this does tap in to the different types of Doctor that we're experiencing, because we've not had one unique Doctor. We've had different interpretations of old ones mishmashed together, which is, there's got to be something going on there. Capaldi is too stupid just to turn around and say, well, this week I'm going to do Patrick Troughton, and then next week I'm going to do Sylvester McCoy. I mean, if he starts playing the spoons next week...
puts a little piece of celery on his coat. It's all good.
All right, gentlemen. Thank you for a wonderful episode. Yet another wonderful episode. I think we had a lot to say about both The Caretaker and Kill the Moon. And I'm excited for what's coming. There's 5 episodes of Doctor Who left. Then we'll have the Christmas episode. And there'll be plenty to speak to in between those. So we'll have plenty yet to come.
Can I get us to make a pact right now?
That
we actually do individual episodes for the remaining five episodes of the season instead of doing the double ups. Like, I love the double ups, don't get me wrong. It's just like I want more time to kind of breathe and discuss this stuff with you guys.
Yeah, that sounds like a plan. You got a deal there, young man.
I'm probably going to be watching the Christmas episode from the UK. So I'm back there. So I'm also hoping to catch the new revamped Doctor Who experience because they've just opened that up with Capaldi. Again, this would tap into they're not getting rid of Capaldi. He is a longer shot deal because they wouldn't have redone all this, you know, the amount of the time and money they put into shooting what is an extra episode for something that's going to last, you know, probably another 2 years. I think we've got 2 years of Capaldi.
Yeah, I think so too. Okay. In other words, get your orders in now for Marcus to fulfill when he flies over in December. With that said, thank you very much for joining us this week. You can find us on the old iTunes web shop, whatever the iTunes store, iTunes. Rate and review us, please. Comment. Let your friends know. It's very important that we keep getting more listeners and more ratings and reviews up on the iTunes store. Visit the website, LonelyTardis.com, where we try to put up as much as we can. We have open discussion threads for every episode every week. And then we also have our podcast episodes. We will be starting our very first giveaway this week. So please stay tuned to the website. And if, follow us on Twitter at Lonely TARDIS, which would help if I remembered the main Twitter account. You can find me at Dolly Domofsky. You can find Sean, who isn't with us today, but you can find him generally at Sean Norton. You can find Steven.
You can find me at Steven Strom, Steven Strom. And actually, on that topic and on the topic of giveaways, previously mentioned doing a giveaway of one of my pieces of Doctor Who paraphernalia to if I reached 1,000 Twitter followers, and then we immediately skipped a week for episodes and skipped another week for episodes. So I think I'll probably I intentionally didn't tweet about the giveaway option specifically because of that. So I'm gonna probably extend that now and do another two episodes and. I will give away a piece of Doctor Who paraphernalia. It'll be a choice between probably one of my posters, a very giant Doctor Who TARDIS cardboard stand, a couple of other things. So I will probably tweet that out as soon as the show is done.
And Marcus, where can we find you?
You can find me in the corner polishing my sonic screwdriver. you can follow me at Annoyed Gamer if you really, really want to. And yes, on the subject of giveaways, I did raise this before. I do have the TARDIS door covering that's too big for my door. And that's, it's like, I think, $120 value. So, we will do that. Once the Lonely TARDIS Twitter gets to 1,500.
Ooh, there we go. Get the Lonely TARDIS Twitter to 1,500, and we'll give that away.
What are we at right now?
We are at, I think, 150.
Oh, and I'll do it when we get to you know what? Get us to 500.
Okay, there you go.
Get us to 500, and then I'll give that away.
All right, there you go. You guys heard it first. Get the Lonely TARDIS Twitter account, at Lonely TARDIS. To 500 followers. We're at 136 right now. Let everybody know. And Marcus is going to give away this amazing door covering. You might want to take a photo of that so we can post it on the site and on the Twitter account. But
I'll send you the link to it.
Beautiful, even better.
It is quite literally too big to unroll because it is huge. I mean, it's a huge door covering that mocks the entrance of the TARDIS. So I'll send you. I'll dig up the link to that. I got it from ThinkGeek. So
one final thing, we didn't get a chance to get to some of the reader remarks and kind of comments. We will get to that next week. There's a lot that's been spoken about and commented about on these last two Doctor Who episodes. So because we have to kind of jam a lot together this week in this supersized episode, next week we'll make a big part of the focus getting to all your comments and questions and stuff. But continue to send us messages on Twitter, on Facebook, on the website, and we are reading every single one and the comments you guys have are absolutely fantastic. Really, they are.
Happy birthday to Sean.
Yes, happy birthday to Sean. Belated happy birthday. Yeah, definitely. And Steven, your birthday's coming up fairly soon too, right?
Yep, it came. It was coming up about 3 weeks ago.
3 weeks ago, that's right.
That's right. You hit puberty. We talked about
that. That's right. Yeah, we did. Yeah, you're right. It all comes back to me now. Let me just go back in time and make sure I can get that. Marcus, I think your birthday is next, actually, right?
Yeah, mine's in December.
Yep. Same with mine. All right, everybody. Take care. Have yourselves a wonderful final few days of this week in the second week of October. I don't even know where I was going with that. Have a good October, everybody. We'll see you on the next episode of The Lonely TARDIS. Bum 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 b